You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports Podcast Network and blogtalkradio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hey, John.
Hey, Alan.
How are you on this cold morning?
On this cold, wintry morning, I'm doing just fine.
Oh, excellent.
And curled Devin, up in my shawl drinking cocoa.
Yeah, nice. Little cocoa action. Sweet. And Devin, how be you?
I'm cold, and now I'm wishing I had cocoa.
And just so everybody knows, check out the Jedi and Germs Twitter account. It is now called Jedi and Germs and Devin, just so everybody knows.
That's an all-star break thing. I'm sure Joe Ingles will take over that third spot again.
Well, or the intern will get bored and decide to do something else. Who knows?
That's okay.
Oh man, we're right in the middle of a winter storm right now. We're getting blitzed, and on my way up here to do the show, it took me 45, almost 50 minutes because I got stuck in traffic, of course. So, but here we are. It's cold outside, and John's got his hot cocoa, and Devin and I are wishing we did. And let's jump into Utah Jazz notes. Let's do it.
Yeah, we've had our nice all-star break. Jazz are playing tonight. Looking forward to that. Let's get this win streak to go longer. But what I really wanted to go over was the remaining strength of schedule and just what it looks like for the Jazz. Jazz are no change from last week, obviously, with 538. They still project the Jazz to go 46-36 to be the sixth seed. But that is still a very tight race. They are projecting the T-Wolves to finish third with 48-34, so that's still only two games. And they have Spurs and Thunder tied in between there with 47. So I'll just do this. They project the T-Wolves to end in third place with 48 wins, Spurs and Thunder to finish with 47, Jazz to finish with 46, which would give them sixth seed, Blazers and Nuggets to finish with 45, and then Pelicans and Clippers to finish with 44. So they believe it's going to be tight all the way through. What does that do with their remaining records? That is if the Jazz go 16-8.
Which I think is
possible. For those other teams. Oh, very possible. For those other teams, that means the T-Wolves go 12-9, Spurs go 12-11, Thunder go 13-9, Blazers go 13-11, Nuggets go 13-11, Pelicans go 13-12, and Clippers go 14-11. So those are their projections right now.
The only one projection I'll fight with in there, and this will go to my next point, is I don't know how comfortable I am in saying the Spurs go 12-11. With or without Kawhi, I know he's being shut down for the remainder of the year. I just don't, or at least I saw that, but I don't think they're done. They're very well coached. I can't believe that the T-Wolves will overtake them for number three. I also, that goes to my next point, I don't like that matchup if we get to the playoffs of the Jazz and the T-Wolves in the first round. I don't like that matchup at all. We have not matched up well with them for 2 years in a row. I'd rather face the Spurs. As a fan, if it were up to me, I would rather face the Spurs in the first round than to face the Timberwolves. Is that fair? I mean, am I the only one that thinks that?
Yes, I would rather have the Spurs than the Timberwolves, but the Timberwolves, you got to look at those defeats early where Rudy wasn't 100% or not playing at all.
Right.
I think the remaining games against them, that's going to be even much more telling as to how we pair up. But yes, I would still rather play the Spurs. We've beaten them 3-0. Kawhi has voluntarily shut himself down. He still might come back at the season, but Greg Popovich doesn't know. No one else on the team seems to know. There's something going on there. As for the other guys that have been injured, LaMarcus Aldridge and Rudy Gay are expected to be able to play. It seems like they expect LaMarcus to play tonight, and they think it's possible Rudy Gay comes back tonight as well.
Right.
So they're about to get fully healthy with the exception of Kawhi. And then if Kawhi decides he does want to play after all, he could join them in a couple weeks. And maybe the Spurs will be a much better team.
Right.
I mean, they lost their last three. They've lost six of their last 10. They are on their way down. But, many graveyards have been dug for people who decided they wanted to bury the Spurs first.
Agreed. And that's why I'm not going with 538 on this one. Now, the other thing I'll mention about the Jazz, looked at the standings last night. As of this very moment, Jazz are only two back of that sixth seed. So it's very doable. And they're only one out of eighth right now in the loss column, I believe.
Yeah. They're Clippers lost, so now they're only a half game behind them.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked about this. It's going to be fascinating when we record next week, because right now they're 4.5 out of third.
Right.
And you look at some of those. I'm looking at the last 10 columns of those teams above us. You know, Jazz 10-0, but for the teams above us, San Antonio 4-6, Minnesota 5-5, Oklahoma City 4-6, Denver 7-3, Portland 6-4, New Orleans 5-5, Clippers 7-3. Jazz are on a better trajectory.
Yeah, they are. You know, and Matt Moore did something. We all know Matt Moore, right? NBA writer did something, and I didn't read through the whole article because apparently I have to pay to subscribe to it. But the first 3-4 paragraphs were very telling. He did some sort of a sports book piece yesterday, talked about this race, this tight race between 3 and 10, and went through it. And one of the things he pointed to is the loss column. He said teams have to be concerned about the loss column. If you're only a game back in the loss column, you're doing pretty good. He goes, if you're worse than that in the loss column, then you've got to play. You've got to play hope everybody else loses. But he says, as long as you keep that loss column, you know, in within a game or two, you hold your own destiny down the stretch. And that's where the Jazz are right now. It was very interesting to see him talk about the trajectory a little bit early on in this piece about the trajectory of what could happen in the final remaining games of the season. And the Jazz was one of those teams he talked about. He says they're on an 11 game winning streak and can they maintain it? And he even said that he talked about the schedule. He said the Jazz have the easiest schedule of all the remaining teams in the West heading down the stretch. And he mentioned it's all about catching teams at the right time. Jazz catch Golden State in the final 3 weeks of the season when, who knows, maybe they rest or they take it easy. It's all about catching teams at the right time, and the Jazz schedule just bodes very well for them right now.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, I was looking up strength and schedule, and as far as ranking from hardest to easiest in the West, it goes Spurs, Suns, Thunder, Clippers, Pelicans, Rockets, Blazers, Nuggets, T-Wolves, Kings, Lakers, and then you get to the Jazz.
Wow.
So the only ones with easier schedules is Mavericks, Grizzlies, and Warriors.
And two so of those
all
three
the teams
don't even
that they're
matter.
Looking at. Yeah, exactly. They're not going to catch the Warriors. The other two are tanking. So,
yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's everything bodes well.
So
for the playoffs.
So you ask a question. I'm going to ask it now. Part of our Jazz talk here. Can the Jazz streak continue, and how far does it go?
Yeah. The 538 says it's not going to end until Indiana, and that would be a 17 game winning streak. I think. The Blazers are not a team they want to sleep on.
No.
And my understanding is Rubio is questionable for tonight, so who knows? But if they can beat the Blazers, then I can see them extending it another 3 or 4 games beyond that.
Keep in mind that one of the games that's situated in here is Houston. Think the Jazz can beat Houston and still make it 13, 14, 15?
I do.
Okay.
Why? Because the Jazz beat the Warriors by 30. I think on any given night, Jazz can beat anyone.
I agree. And I've been saying, I felt the Jazz would push this to 13, which includes that Houston game. I still think they will. Devin is shaking his head because he's disagreeing with both of us. Mr. Bring it back down to dirt poor reality.
Sorry, guys. we've got an 11-game win streak, and that's been great, but you've taken a break. You've lost the momentum. And so I think tonight is going to be quite a challenge, and I'm not so confident against the Houston team because, if you recall, I believe Houston won 10 in a row as well prior to the break. So one of those, I think, is going to be the giving out point, and I have a feeling that it might be tonight. But
and they have Joe Jesus now.
Well, you can't bet against Joe Jesus.
No, but here's my thing. I agree with you, Devin. But I heard Locke say something similarly before the break. But he said, you never want to have 10 days like that. You just don't. But he says, in the case of the Jazz, I think it's more beneficial to them than any other team because they can get healthy. So for the health reasons, I think it is. I think they'll be fine.
For the health reasons?
Well, yeah, you get Rubio. Maybe you get Rubio back. Maybe you do.
But if he's not, but you get other guys.
But you get other guys that have had time to recoup and get better and get well. And you're that much closer to having Exum back on the floor too.
Right.
I'm just telling you.
That's a homer statement. Because
really?
Yes. Because every team had that opportunity to rest guys and get healthy and do this and that. It's not like Exum's back or like that Rudy was out and he's suddenly back or he was on the mend before the break. The Jazz were relatively healthy, as healthy as they're going to get this season.
John, he just called me a homer. I call Locke a homer.
That's a homer comment.
I was going to say, if you're calling me a homer, I think John just has a new name for the Jedi and Germs Twitter account. Alan is a homer.
John, am I wrong?
But here's the thing. Well, let me make this point before going back to Portland. The Houston game, why that is winnable, it's the second of a back-to-back, and they're playing in Denver the night before. So if ever, I mean, that is prime territory for the Rockets to have their streak end, is somewhere in there. That's why I think they do have a good chance against the Rockets. As far as Portland goes, you know, yes, everyone has had over a week to rest. Everyone has their own injuries that they're trying to recoup from. But Utah has the advantage of they had their win streak. They had it when they made a trade. It didn't disrupt anything. And now they've had the week to, you know, get Jay Crowder more into it. They've had the trajectory of Royce O'Neal. Portland hasn't really had any injury issues lately. They've been fully healthy going into the break. So they are who they are when we play them anyway. And the Jazz, something else to consider. The first four games are all going to be home games for the Jazz. So
I'm with him.
You know, there's the natural advantage there.
Jazz do have a back-to-back tonight and tomorrow, but it's a home back-to-back. I mean, how much better can that be? You get rest at home and you can just kind of chill tomorrow and back at it.
And yeah, that's fine. Just beat the Blazers 2 weeks ago
in Portland.
Now we're getting them here.
Yes, we did.
And that's fine. And I like what you're saying about, you know, Bay Crowder having more time to get integrated with the system and whatnot. I just, we got to at least warn people that this eventually does have to end.
Well, yeah.
And this is a playoff team that is fighting for position as well with Lillard, with McCollum. Lillard, the guy who went off in the All-Star game.
Which is okay. We want him to go off because the last time we played, we let him go off and we took care of everybody else.
You don't want him to go off, though.
How many did he have?
Let's keep in mind the majority of people listening to this is going to be after the Blazers game. So,
yeah, that's true. That's true.
So they can be like, wow, Devin was right. So
they can say we were right or we were wrong. I say they'll win.
All okay, right. last question before we move on. Last question. With all of that in mind, and I totally just lost my train of thought here. Oh, with that in mind, in the past, I've been a person. I've had the opinion teams that win 13, 12, 13, 14, 15 or more in a row are generally teams to be concerned with in the playoffs. They are the better, the elitists. They are the top, the cream of the crop when it comes to teams. Are we prepared to put the Jazz in that group yet?
Elite?
Well, because here's my...
I think the Jazz are the team that, outside of the Warriors and the Rockets, nobody wants to face in the first round.
Right. But here's what I'm getting at, right? In the NBA, and this has been historical, I'd love to go back and look, but if you go back in the NBA, if you win 6 to 8 games in a row, you're a good team. If you win 10 to 15 in a row, you're a great team, aren't you? I mean, you go back, the last time the Jazz won 15 in a row, they did it twice, and both years they happened to go to the NBA Finals. Teams don't win 10 to 15 in a row very often, and they're usually the elite club. They're usually the teams that are going deep in the playoffs. Am I right?
Yeah.
I mean, the last team that won more than that was Atlanta a couple of years ago. They won 20 in a row, and they ended up winning 66 games, and they were a good playoff team. So that's my whole point. If the Jazz get to 13, 14, 15, are we prepared to put them in the elitist club?
Who else is in the club, though?
Well, I mean, you mentioned a few.
Right now, they're, I don't know, probably the seventh best team in the NBA.
Okay. Then that's an elite club to me. I mean, you got Raptors and Cleveland in the East. I mean, Jazz are right there with them at this point, aren't they?
I don't know if I'd put them with the Raptors. Here's the thing. There are five teams right now that have a shot at winning the title this year. It's the Rockets and Warriors, and it's the Cavs, Raptors, and Celtics.
Okay.
And so I would put Jazz in the next tier.
Okay.
Of your teams that are going to have a good showing in the playoffs.
Okay.
I think they're one of those teams.
And I agree with that. I wanted your thoughts on it. I agree with that. Devin's got a smirk on his face. It's coming.
But can you really say that about Raptors? You know, as good as their season is, they always fall apart in the playoffs, let's be honest.
All right, good point.
So,
but eventually that's going to change.
I agree. I think it will eventually, but
they're the Buffalo Bills, but eventually that's got to change. They're number one in the East.
Right.
They've got to be doing something right.
Right. So, okay, that's enough on the Jazz. Let's move on to NBA news and notes. We do have a couple things to hit there. So, NBA news and notes.
How much of the All-Star Weekend did you watch?
Most of it.
All of it.
Me too.
I didn't. I recorded the rookie challenge, went back and watched the second half. I watched all of Saturday night. I couldn't get away from it. And then I watched all of the game Sunday.
That's about what I did. I didn't watch more than 2 minutes of the celebrity game.
I watched
most or all of everything else.
You didn't watch the celebrity game?
No. I'm not interested, especially when there's, who was it, Justin Bieber? No, thank you.
No, Bieber didn't have a good showing. I believe Quavo, is that his name, got the MVP. played some solid defense.
Of course you would know all this. Of course you watched it.
The Rachel A. DeMita, I don't know if I said her name right. She's the host of like the 2K Live. She's got a shot. She's got a nice jump shot and a good game. I really enjoyed watching her play.
Are we really breaking down the celebrity game?
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, Devin. Let's get on to better and more interesting things.
I wanted to talk about 2K Bay, okay?
Hey, thoughts on the rookie game? Because I missed the first half, but it sounded like Donovan was playing defense and was going well. But then you're watching the second half, and it was turning out to be years past All-Star games. Did it seem that way to you?
I thought it was better in the first quarter, and it just kind of degenerated into everyone get their highlights after that. Donovan had this really cool steal and dunk early, and I enjoyed that early. And then after that, it just seemed to be like he was more focused when he was on the floor of getting everyone else their shots. If I remember right, he led the team in assists.
Oh, he had to have. He was the only guy really looking to pass.
Which, by the way, can we just talk about the final pass of the game? Everybody talked about that dunk, but can we talk about that pass? The no-look, throw-it-up lob that I didn't see coming, and there it is, perfect pass right in the hands of, who was it that dunked? I can't even remember his name.
Was it Collins?
Yeah, it was Collins.
Yeah.
Just, wow. Donovan Mitchell, wow.
that's the Utah connection right there.
I'm telling you.
throwing it up to the Leighton native.
Oh, is Collins a Leighton native?
Yes.
I did not know that. So, all right, from there, dunk contest, three-point contest. Thoughts on the three-point contest? I want to hear your thoughts, and then I'll tell you. Anyway, what did you think of that?
I wish Joe had been a part of it.
Same.
But I thought it was really cool. The final round was really cool. Between Clay and Devin Booker. So I enjoyed the three-point contest. There were some guys that had really bad showings that you almost felt sorry for.
The one guy that put up only, what, 7 or 8?
It was a cool
eight?
Final showdown.
Yeah.
I think Paul George only had 7 points.
Yeah, it was.
And that's with Moneyball. So that's
exactly.
Like any rec league guy can do 7.
Well, and with exception of the final round, I found the entire three-point contest a lackluster event. I didn't get into it. watched the whole thing, but I just thought, really, these are supposed to be the best shooters in the NBA, and they can't hit a, they can't hit the broadside of the barn. And then the final round is where it got good, and Booker caught fire. Wow. But I, you know, we've had better 3-point shootouts in years past, so I didn't find this one all that good. Devin?
Yeah, I watch and I just wonder how good I could do. Probably not very.
No.
I would probably make Paul George look like an all-star.
But, wow. Also, skills challenge. It sounds like the guy that everybody predicted would win it didn't win it. came in barely. Dinwiddie, seriously.
Dinwiddie won, so who was the favorite?
I think the favorite was the guy he was going up against. Markkanen? Was it Markkanen?
Was he the favorite? I don't think he was.
It seemed like he was a lot of people's favorite. Like the guys on TV. Well,
I mean, the commentary. I was very entertained by the commentary all weekend.
Yeah, me too. And I just
Chris Webber kept changing who his favorite was. He's like, I predict these three guys will win. I had fun with that.
I
really enjoyed the skills contest, and I didn't think I would, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. And I just saw Markkanen's name come up on Twitter a lot over the last week leading up to it. So it seemed like he was the guy everybody expected, the big, and finally a guard takes it back. Finally it goes back to the little guys. But did you see Embiid's, I'm not going to do this pass anymore and just run right past it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that Embiid did not trust the process and decided to cheat the process and just, you know, we're not doing this part.
Yeah.
And then he still lost. You know, I wanted him to win it so they could be like, you know what? No.
Yeah. Well, let's go back and look. You didn't. Dunk contest. Let's hit it. Spider Mitchell was there. Let's talk about it.
Okay. Before we say anything, I want to know, what was your dunk of the night?
My dunk of the night would have been Nance's double tap.
Not mine. I still would have gone Spida's recreation of Vince Carter's dunk. I just, that is still my favorite dunk contest of all time. And so to watch Mitchell come in and recreate that entire experience, that was my favorite dunk, easily.
See, and I'm actually going to go with Dennis Smith Jr.'s dunk in the first round.
That one was good too.
I thought that was probably the dunk of the night. You know, but you got to make your dunks, and the key to success in the dunk contest is you need to make your dunks on the first try, or you need to do something different.
We're looking at you, Oladipo.
but that was something that Mitchell did really well. You know, he went to do the mailman tribute dunk, and missed it.
And he says, I'll change it.
He immediately went to something different.
Yeah, he did.
So you didn't know what was coming. I thought that was really smart.
Yep. Shout out to Ian Rappaport on that. He set him up early. He said, hey, take it easy. Calm yourself. Rethink it. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, did the right person win it? I mean, obviously, by a point standpoint, he did. I mean, a lot of people have argued whether he was the right person. Did the right person win it?
Yeah, I think overall body of work, Mitchell was the winner. I think individual dunks might have been better, but overall body of work was probably Mitchell. I think he got a generous score on his first dunk.
Yeah.
Because if I remember right, he got like a 48 on his first dunk, and then Oladipo went next, and he got like a 31 or something, and that just kind of set the tone the rest of the night. I think Mitchell's, they probably should have started off with straight nines or something and then gone from there, because they should have been able to leave themselves room on their scoring. Their scoring was kind of weird, but
did I not say that on the last podcast that's always what happens?
Yes,
you
did.
You set the bar too high with those first dunks.
Yes, you did.
You're too generous with those first numbers, and then it's like, where do you go?
So, and I have a feeling on this. I mean, everybody was really anticipating Mitchell coming in because people have seen him dunk. These guys that were everybody's seen him dunk all year long. So this was no surprise. I can see why they set it up so high. Oladipo, to be fair, I think scored low just because of how horrible his first attempts were. And I wonder if that affected the judges' opinions before it even began.
I think so. They've said in years past that missed dunks won't affect your score, but I think they should. I think missed dunks should affect your score a little bit, but difficulty should also come into play. I was agreeing a lot with the commentators on that one, in that they're saying that some of these dunks you just kind of have to watch again in slow-mo to really appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I think the judges should all be former dunkers, people who've participated in the contest.
Right.
But ironically, Dr. J was one of the most generous, and DJ Khalid was one of the least generous. And I appreciated him being there to be the Simon of the group, to kind of bring the numbers down so that other people had room to go somewhere.
And see, I'm the guy that's watching, and every time I'm watching Dr. J's score, because I'm wondering if I agree with him. And I'm not going to lie, 9 times out of 10, I agreed with his assessment of the dunks. I didn't really have issue with him on most of those assessments. So, all right. That's Saturday night. Let's roll into Sunday, the game. John, I know you have opinions about this game because we tweeted about it. I saw you tweet about it. I mean, first of all, before we get into the meat of the game, the pregame festivities leading up to and including the rendition of the national anthem, I really could have done without most of that, honestly. And Fergie, I didn't think did a very good job on that national anthem either. In fact, judging from Twitter's reaction to most of it, it was not good.
I DVR'd it and started it about, 40 minutes after it started. So I was able to fast forward through commercials. I did not watch the Kevin Hart, Rob Riggle stuff that I hear was awful.
It was.
I just skipped right to the introductions, and then Star Spangled Banner, I skipped most of that because I pretty much caught the gist of what it was going to be. Uh-huh. I've been entertained by the reactions.
Yeah, so have I.
But she tried something different and it didn't work. And
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I hit the mute about 10 seconds into it. I hit the mute. I'm like, nope, I'm done.
I've watched a lot more of like the reaction GIFs and.
Oh, they're hilarious. Clips.
Yeah, so we got entertainment out of that. And then the actual game was very entertaining, I thought. It was sloppy in the beginning, but that's because the guys just never knew when their opponent was going to play defense, so there were a ton of turnovers. But at least it was competitive. And especially in the fourth quarter, they really picked it up. And I think it was true where they said, if your name is on your team, you really want your team to win. LeBron really wanted the LeBron team to win.
Right.
And so I really enjoyed it. I mean, last All-Star game, you're watching three quarters of highlights and you're like, all right, let's get all these highlights out of the way. Yeah, some of these dunks are cool and whatnot, but then let's see the competition kicking in. And it never kicked in. And this time, they weren't going 100%, but at least there was effort in there, and especially at the end. So I appreciated all of that. And that's how I like my All-Star games to go.
And to end it on a defensive sequence? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That was awesome. That was really cool to watch. But I'm looking back, and it was still very high scoring. But I'll be honest, I don't know if the high scoring was as a result of so bad defense as it was. Guys were hot from downtown. There was a lot of three-point shooting in that All-Star game. A lot. When you got Embiid that hits three in a row, like, I mean, it guys are just hitting from downtown, and it was over and over again, and that's where your points are coming in bunches. I agree with you. I felt it was an entertaining game, and for the first time in a long time, we saw players actually seem to care about what they're doing out on the court, not just putting on a show, and it was good. I enjoyed it. What did you think of the way that the teams were drafted when all is said and done?
Televised the draft.
Televised the draft, but were you okay with the layout the way it ended up being?
Yeah.
Okay.
LeBron said he picked KD first, and so Steph had his, options. And for a team that was actually depleted, LeBron wound up the last three or four substitutes were all on the LeBron team. Yeah, he was still able to win. I enjoyed all of that. I think it would have been more enjoyable if they would have televised the draft.
Right.
It sounds like they're going to next year, just from the reactions of everybody. I think they will televise it next year.
It would be fun.
and that'll be fun. Yeah.
And the MVP of the game was who again? LeBron. Any surprise there?
No, not the way it was going.
Oh, this was LeBron's weekend.
Yeah, it was. Holy crap, it was.
Between the press that he was getting and everything that was going down that way.
Oh, yeah.
To the All-Star game. I mean, this was LeBron's weekend.
And shined in the game, period.
LeBron shined overall.
Yeah.
And I honestly think that it was all good for the league.
I won't disagree.
LeBron James is, in my opinion, one of the best people in athletics that you can have as the face of your entity. You know what I'm saying? And so to have him up there speaking on issues and enjoying the All-Star game and, you know, the way he celebrated after that defensive play, it was just, I think it was a very good weekend for the NBA.
Agreed.
Yep.
Okay. So that's it for All-Star Weekend. We did touch a little bit on the Kawhi Leonard injury. I don't know if we have to really touch on it anymore. Do you, other than to say, are you concerned about the relations between Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs at this point?
Yeah. It's like the relationship with Aldridge was bad and everyone figured it was Aldridge's fault and they got everything worked out and now he's happy. And now Kawhi's unhappy, but this feels different than any other problem the Spurs have had in the last 25 years.
Well,
there's just something strange about it.
It just surprises me because this is an organization for the last 20 years that has been touted as such a class act organization and easy to work with and the right, you know, anybody can come in and play. They win titles. They, you know, Tim Duncan, Coach Pop, you know, I don't understand. Where does the benefit of the doubt come in for the Spurs here and not Kawhi?
Well, I don't know. That's the whole thing with this is it's such a big mystery. Right. They're saying Kawhi is now medically cleared, but they don't think he's going to come back for the rest of the season, but he could. So now it's a matter of, is it mentally where he doesn't believe he's actually 100%? Or is something else going on where he's just not happy with the way things are going and is just sitting out? No one knows. At least no one said publicly. And it is something where I figure I wouldn't be surprised if he does sit out the rest of the season and they have some serious discussions in the off season. I think every other NBA team would love to give up whatever they needed to get him. He's in his prime. I mean, he was third in MVP votes last year. I think he was third. So he's this incredible talent who just suddenly just doesn't want to play, and it doesn't make sense.
Well, I think I know what's happened.
Okay.
I think you can't really fault the Spurs organization for this because they don't really know how Kawhi is feeling because the guy never smiles. I mean, he's upset. You don't know he's upset. He always looks like that.
Well, that's awesome, Devin. That's awesome. I just hope they work this out. I do. I would hate to see Kawhi leave. Kawhi leaving could very well decimate that organization. I know everybody says no, it can't, but the Spurs are like the Jazz. They're the small market team. They make it on stars, loyalty, and remaining and building around them and things. If Kawhi leaves, that's not good. And I don't think it can bode well for them at all.
Yeah, but can you imagine if this had been known at the start of the season, if the Spurs had tanked and you had the second coming of Tim Duncan, because that's how they got so good before. You know, they had that one season, one down season, and then hit the lottery. Can you imagine Kawhi paired with your boy from overseas, John?
Which one?
Right.
Yeah. Yep. The lights went on upstairs. Oh, that's awesome, John. No, I don't know. That's enough on that. We don't have to touch on it more. I don't know. All right, let's move on to listener questions. John, did we get a question this week?
Yes, we did. This is from Danielle. If you could be any superhero, who would you be and why?
All right, you answer first.
I would be Dr. Manhattan from Watchmen.
Ooh.
He's super intelligent, super powerful. I would pick him over anybody else because he's virtually a god, so might as well go for the one with the most power.
Okay. I'm going to choose the Dark Knight, Batman. I grew up loving Superman, but Batman is one of my favorite superheroes. And I love him because, he's got the money, but he's got the darkness about him. I just kind of like the dark ambiance of the Dark Knight and his gadgets and his suit and just everything about him. The Dark Knight is my favorite, easily. Devin?
I don't know. I don't know superheroes very well, so...
He'll be Plastic Man. Moving on.
Plastic Man? No, come on. Like Triangle Man? I'll say Superman.
Stretchy Man?
Superman works for me. He gets to fly and he changes in a telephone booth or whatever. And I think there's a pretty girl involved. So yeah, I'll be Superman.
All right, there you go. Okay, thanks for the question. Let's move on to Devin's Quick Hits. Sorry, I had to look at my notes. Devin's Quick Hits.
Yeah. All right. A little bit more on NBA, talking about updating the playoff system. The thought of going to a 1 through 16 seeding with all teams in the league. I've also seen talk of doing like a play-in for those last few playoff spots. I don't know how that would work in terms of, you know, setting up a tournament or whatever. And what that would do to the timing of the playoffs as well. What are your guys' thoughts? Anything you'd like to see changed, or do you keep that system the same for now? Do you let this East-West thing kind of sort itself out, if it ever sorts itself out?
I don't think it'll ever really sort itself out, but I wouldn't want to do any major changes until they expand to 32 teams. I think it's time to expand to 32 teams, and once they do that, then they can jigger with everything else. So I hope they keep it. But I also think they're floating this now because if LeBron goes west, I think that is the season that they go, all right, we're going 1 through 16.
Right.
And you're thinking Seattle, aren't you?
Yep. Seattle number one, and don't really care where the other one goes. There's a lot of good candidates. But Seattle is, I think they're the 11th biggest media market in the United States. They need an NBA team back.
So I was a proponent of the 1 through 16 previously, maybe, at least considering it. But I don't know if I'm ready for it yet. And after looking at the way that the standings are stacking up in both East and West, I mean, the Jazz right now, if they were in the East, would be in the 8th seed. And they're only a game out of the 8th seed in the West. So it's fairly balanced right now. Outside of the top two or three teams, you're really balanced the rest of the way down on both conferences, I thought. I don't know if 1 through 16 is the answer yet.
But correct me if I'm wrong here. When you think about the records being close, how much of that is the teams being at the same level, and how much of that is the Eastern teams are playing more games against the East, and the Western teams are playing more games against the West, and so it kind of balances out records that way, does it not? Like, I feel like if you took the 8th seed in the East and threw them into the Western Conference and had them play that same schedule...
Who's the 8th seed at 30 and 28? I can't remember. I just looked at it last night.
In the East?
Yes.
Miami.
Miami could be right in that Denver, Utah, LA Clipper range.
Yeah, I suppose they could.
And in the West, I think they still could be. So I think it's starting to balance out a little more. But you're right. If LeBron moves West, you might have to start reconsidering things.
Okay, let's see what else we got here. I'm gonna stick to some lighter stuff, and then we'll kind of go into a few other things. Louisville, their championship from I believe it was 2013 is gone. Is it really gone? Do you care? The NCAA vacating victories and championships and things like that. Does that matter? Like,
matters to Mitchell.
But does it?
I don't know. I saw him tweet about it.
I feel like
it's kind of dumb, really.
It is. I don't think it's. I think it's dumb too. It is what it is.
I don't know what else you do though. I just don't know how you punish them. You know, we had another NCAA issue come up this morning or late last night. I'm not sure when. A lot of schools under fire. FBI investigation finding that payers were getting paid from an NBA agent, I believe, including University of Utah. Kyle Kuzma came up on that list, receiving payments estimated $9,500, give or take a few thousand. What do we do here, guys? I mean, these players should be paid, right? At least some form of compensation. Does that stop this, though? Is it just the nature of the beast that there's always going to be money in sports where you have this talent and people see potential to make more money later? They'll risk it. I mean, you're dealing with kids here.
See, this is tough because they are kids. They don't have any money yet. They see people making millions of dollars off of them. It's understandable. I know it's against the rules, but it's also understandable. And so it's hard for me to get too worked up about it. I don't know what the right answer here is.
I'm of the opinion that I think players need to be compensated to a point. I get it. I get why they're doing it still this way, but you especially when you get into colleges, and not every college is like this, unfortunately. We know this. Winning matters more in a lot of places and circumstances. But these athletes don't have time to work jobs because they're putting in time after school, working out, doing things, practice, everything like that. And then they're being marketed. Let's be fair. Their likeness is being marketed for the NCAA. So to my personal opinion, I think these guys should be compensated a little bit more for what they're doing. How that compensation comes, I don't know. And the NCAA, I think, needs to take a hard look at it, needs to do something about it. Find a way to help them out. Granted, a lot of them have scholarships, and that's being taken care of. But do scholarships solve everything? I don't think so.
No, certainly not. I mean, These are people, and they have other expenses, and they have other things that they want. You know, the school will sure provide housing and tuition and books or whatever.
Right.
And that's great, and there's a lot of money there. But they'll also do that for academic students, and those academic students can go out after their schooling, and they can get a job, like you said, Alan, and they can work, and they can bring in some money. You can't do that when you're an athlete.
No, you can't.
It's just not possible. And what are you supposed to do?
Right.
You know, the Kuzma example, $9,500. You know how little $9,500 is?
That's half a year of school, yeah. Isn't it? I mean, maybe, or a year of school. I mean, that's not a lot.
What? No, I mean, you work full-time minimum wage, and you're going to make about that much money.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
These guys can't even get part-time jobs because the schedule just won't allow it. $9,500. And I think that may have been over the course of his time in school, which was, what, 2-3 years? And I think he came out after his third year.
And I know this is a quick hit, but then you even go, you've got some of these kids are coming from circumstances where they weren't well off before they even entered college anyway. Scholarship's the only thing that got them there. Otherwise, they come from, you know, poorer circumstances with their family, maybe single mom, whoever it is, barely making ends meet at home to try and get them to school. No, I think it needs to be a serious look needs to be taken by the NCAA.
Right. Right. And we're talking basketball right now.
Right.
But this spans into other things. And you look at college football. I mean, college football is an insane moneymaker.
Right. Absolutely.
So I don't know, but it'll be interesting. I feel like change has to come in the next few years for this all to work. So yep, maybe that's been said, but I don't know.
I agree.
Let's do another quick hit. And John, I'd kind of like you to take the lead on this one. There was an investigative article that came out, Sports Illustrated. I'm not sure if you read it. It was pertaining to the Dallas Mavericks organization. I saw the subject, and I just went, I don't want to touch that right now. But if you can kind of give us the brief if you read it.
I did a while ago. I'm trying to remember the details, but there was one or two employees within the Mavericks organization, high ranking, who've been accused of sexual harassment. And if I remember right, one of them was accused of hitting an employee and then also domestic abuse. I mean, it's something in that realm. And so they got rid of the guys, and Mark Cuban said he didn't know about it. He's, you know, severely apologized and all that. And at the same time, Mark Cuban's in trouble for openly admitting on, I think it was Julius Irving's podcast, that he told his players it's okay for them to lose this year. So he got a $600,000 fine for that. So between those two things, it's not been a good week for Mark Cuban.
No.
This is all part of the culture movement we're going through to clean up businesses and organizations and just the workplace in general to be free from, you know, harassment and abuse and misconduct and all that. And so Mavericks are another organization where they showed that they were not immune to that. And they had this culture that some people knew about and others didn't, and it was allowed to thrive for a while. So, you know, he's the latest to find himself caught in it because one or two of his employees were engaging in this.
I don't have anything to add. I thought John said it perfectly. I agree. It needs to be cleaned up. It does.
And it sounded to me like the Dallas Mavericks was maybe a starting point, and that these issues of, you know, sexual misconduct are pretty prevalent in the league. That wouldn't surprise me. Prevalent in all of sports, honestly.
Prevalent in business overall.
Yes, yeah, that's true as well. Do we foresee this being something where there's going to be more dominoes falling? Like, this is just the first one.
Yeah, I do.
With this sort of thing, because I kind of get that vibe as well.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Let's.
I just pulled up the latest, so let me just give a little more context to this.
Perfect.
The employee in question had been a member of the Mavericks for 20 years, and there were multiple sexual harassment complaints against him. And another one was they found out about domestic violence, and he was only let go last week, and one of the incidents was with a team employee. So you had two incidents where one was engaged in multiple domestic violence incidents, and then you had another one who had had sexual harassment complaints against him for 20 years before he was finally let go.
Businesses can't.
So that's why it's really why Cuban's in trouble for that.
I agree. Businesses can't sweep it under the rug. You can't. You have to face it. You have to square it up. You have to clear it. You have to get it taken care of. It has to be done. Sweeping it under the rug is never the good thing.
No, that's not the answer with anything.
No.
You know, no. And that's you can put it under the rug and it'll stay there for a while, but it's still there.
It's
and eventually
fester.
It's coming out.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
So
have either of you guys worked in an environment like that?
Trying to think.
Because I have.
I've only had three or four jobs over the course of my adult life. No, I've been in a good environment in most cases.
Yeah, I worked for a company where the owner regularly sexually harassed employees, but he was the owner and it was the 90s and people just kind of put up with it and didn't really know what to do with it.
Right.
And it was, you know, it was a poisonous environment. And I had another job where the boss was sleeping with one of his employees and gave her a promotion. And everyone knew what was going on, but no one really knew what to do about it. And that's just kind of what the workplace was like. And that's just not happening anymore. That is more and more getting done away with. And I think that's a good thing.
So do I. All right, Devin, you got one last one, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's wrap up with some lighter talk. I want to talk Olympics with you guys. You guys watched anything recently? Have you been following the happenings, or do I need to bring you up to speed on how awesome the USA is?
I haven't watched, but I did see night before last that the USA women's hockey team won against Canada. So yeah, that's my caught up.
Okay.
John?
I caught the end of that, and I also caught that Lindsey Vonn won her bronze.
Okay, cool. So pretty impressive, I thought, to have the women's hockey team go out and get the gold over Canada. I think Canada had won like two or three Olympics in a row, if I remember correctly. One thing that I want to touch on, have you guys watched any curling yet?
No.
No.
Okay. I'm not watching the Olympics. I'm avoiding them. No. And now I work swing shift, so I can't.
No,
okay?
You can.
No.
You can. You can. And we're gonna try and get this podcast up online today.
DVR.
No.
No,
you
no.
Don't even, you don't even need a DVR, okay? Here is what is happening. The U.S. men's curling team defeated Canada. And again, I believe Canada had won the Olympic gold two or three times in a row. They defeated them in the semis, and they are moving on to the gold medal match against Sweden.
Did anybody break their broom?
No, there were no broken brooms.
Okay, just checking.
Jonas, if you're listening, I want to know if you're a curling fan. If you want to go curl, let me know. We'll go, you know, hit the ice. But I'm cheering Team USA, and I hope it doesn't damage our friendship.
I can't believe we're talking about curling. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, so if you want to watch the gold medal match, it will be on tonight, this morning, Saturday morning, 1:25 Eastern. So that's 11:25 p.m. Friday evening Mountain Time. It'll be on NBC Sports Network. And I will probably be awake live tweeting this. So if you have questions on how it works, what the score is, yada yada, let's talk some curling. And I've been very critical of the men's curling team, and I hope they prove me wrong and bring home the gold.
And if you do plan to sit up and watch it with Devin like you do, and you enjoy a good drink, I would suggest the bar. It's a good place to step into. That way you don't have to, you can lose your mind a little bit for a while.
Curling is a drinking sport. Traditionally, the winning team will purchase drinks for the losing team after a match. So.
I'm glad I'm not the only one laughing at this. Go ahead, John. What do you got?
I actually have something on this that can then also kind of tie into pop culture. So did you guys see the news? Okay, Russia is not officially allowed to participate in these Olympics because of their doping scandal, but they do have individual athletes who are allowed to participate. Yes. So they're being called Olympic athlete from Russia. And if you look at the medal count, the Olympic athletes from Russia are in seventh. But this week, one of the Russian curling guys was busted for doping. So even... even curling has doping. Russia is so used to doping, they can't even let their curlers go clean.
because pushing that broom needs doping help.
they dope in everything.
I'm going to just say this as a curler. Curling does require some physical conditioning, but I don't see why you would need to dope to do that. So... yeah, that was kind of an odd one to find.
I can't believe this. Oh, my goodness. All right.
The reason this ties in is because Academy Awards are in about a week and a half, and one of the best documentary feature nominees is called Icarus. And it is about a guy who wants to recreate Lance Armstrong's doping regimen to see how it does for himself. And he gets the help from a Russian doctor who helped the Olympic team's dope. And it's really fascinating. And it kind of takes a turn as you're watching it that I don't want to ruin. But I highly recommend it. It's on Netflix. It's called Icarus. And that ties into this. So,
all right, Devin, is that the end of Quick Hits? Are we good?
I'm just going to say I hope there's an Icarus 2, a sequel, which they do curling. So I can see exactly how much difference that makes for the sport of curling. But yeah, let's call it there, and you guys can watch curling with me this evening.
All right, let's move on. John's already given us a segue. Let's go ahead and move on to pop culture. John, you already mentioned that. Let's talk about our main feature of pop culture today, though. Black Panther.
I, believe it or not, have not seen this yet.
Oh, you haven't?
No, I haven't. But what I did want to point out is that it shattered February's box office records. It had the fifth highest opening of all time. It currently is already at over $500 million worldwide. It's going to open a ton of doors. It's very well reviewed. I'm going to see it this weekend. I did not get a chance to see it last weekend, so I will throw it to you because I know you saw it. So what did you think?
So, and I was picked on Facebook for saying it this way, but it is one of my favorite Marvel films, but for a completely different reason than others. I felt like it was one of the most beautiful Marvel films. The imagery, the special effects, the everything about it was beautiful. Wakanda, all of it, just gorgeous. The actors and actresses, beautiful. And they did such a wonderful job. The story was beautiful. You know, a lot of people, it tackles some social issues of today. But I thought it did it in such a subtle, brilliant way to not make you feel like you're watching a movie that's trying to force social issues. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And I thought they did such a wonderful job. A few notes. I mean, Chadwick Boseman did a good job. I don't think he stole the show. I feel like Lupita Nyong'o was great. Loved her in this. I wish we could have gotten. I can't even talk enough about this because you haven't seen it yet. So we're gonna have to wait some of it till you come back. But just the cast was great. The story was great. I enjoyed this movie from start to finish. If you just, as with any Marvel film, stick around in the end. This one has two scenes at the very end, and there, nothing particularly special or out of the ordinary about them, but stick around for them. One of them you'll appreciate, I think, John. So, but I don't know. It was just really good.
I have seen that Killmonger is arguably the best Marvel Cinematic Universe villain we've had so far. How did you think he was?
You're talking about Michael B. Jordan's character, right?
Yeah.
Yes, but I felt like he could have had more depth. I loved him. I actually he's one of the characters that I think stole the show and was really good. I feel like they could have done even more with him, but he was good. And the entire story, his backstory, the entire story that led up to him becoming a villain, and then some of the final scenes of the film involving him, just, I can't use beautiful enough. It was beautiful. It's touching. So the movie hits some good feels. It's really good. So I looked at my son when we were watching. I said, the Star Wars character count is at 2. He came home, or I got home from work last night. He corrected me. He says, Dad, actually, it's at 3. There are 3 characters in this film that have all been featured in recent Star Wars films. Forrest Whitaker, Lupita Nyong'o, and Andy Serkis. So you've got Snoke, Maz Kanata, and Saw Gerrera all making appearances in this film. So, yeah, there's your Star Wars factoid knowledge there for you. So
cool.
But yeah, it was, I can't wait to talk to you further about it because I want to hear your thoughts on it. I thought it was wonderful. My family enjoyed it. My wife and I talked about it. The kids, they all liked it. So definitely a must see. Definitely go see it. Just go. So any other pop culture stuff? I know Devin's got something to enter here because he's timidly approaching the mic on this.
There's no timidly about how I approach the microphone. I own the microphone.
He's strutting up to that mic like a boss.
Let me crack the neck to the side here, crack my knuckles, and get my swagger going. I watched a show.
Yes, you did. And?
And the show is on Netflix, and it is called Everything Sucks. You guys heard of it?
Is this like the nightmare version of the Lego movie, Everything is Awesome?
No.
Okay. No, I have not heard of it. Tell me about it.
It is the story of young love in the 90s. And the soundtrack to this series is wonderful. If you like the 90s, if you don't like the 90s, you're probably not going to like the music. But I really, really enjoyed it. I watched it last weekend and it took me less than 24 hours to get through the season. There's only one season online. But I would highly recommend. Highly, highly recommend it.
Okay.
Cool.
All right.
I watched on Netflix, I watched the movie When We First Met. my kids had watched it and really enjoyed it. And so my wife and I went ahead and watched it with one of my sons. Well, it was his third time, and it's pretty good. He's never seen Groundhog Day, so this was a lot more enjoyable to him because of that. I think it's good in what it does in its own right. It's about a guy who misses his chance with the girl of his dreams. She winds up getting engaged to somebody else, and he gets the opportunity to go back in time to the night they met to try to change what he did so that he can get her to fall in love with him. And every time he does, it kind of screws up the timeline. So he keeps going back to that day, trying to get it right to get their relationship to last. And it goes into some funny places. My kids liked it more than I did. I think it's kind of aimed more at the teenage market.
Right.
And is more enjoyable if you haven't seen Groundhog Day, but it was funny in its own right. It starred Adam Devine. Is that his name? He's from the Pitch Perfect movies and Workaholics. Yep. You'd recognize him if you saw him. So yeah, it was pretty decent.
Okay. I have one more question to you. Did you enjoy Elementary? I mean, it's still ongoing. They're in season 6. Have you enjoyed that series? You ever watched it?
I watched one episode.
Just one episode. Okay. Did you care for it at all?
Yeah, it's fine. Not enough to watch a second episode.
Okay. I've really gotten into it. Been backtracking. We have like switching around on cable trying to find it. And so we're catching up the first 4 seasons. WGN seems to keep playing it. So I've been enjoying it. But very interesting take on Sherlock Holmes. Watson being played by Lucy Liu. Holmes being played by, and I can't even think of his name, but a very, very stoic, very hard to read Holmes. But I've actually enjoyed it. I don't know if you couldn't get past the first episode, I guess. Okay. If you can give it another shot and get a few episodes in, maybe you'll like it, but I don't know, John, it might not be your bit. So, I don't know. I just something I was throwing out there. It's something I've been watching heavily lately, binge watching a lot. All right. Let's go ahead and wrap it up. I think we've got a good show here this week, and we've talked about a lot of good things. Let's wrap it up. We want to thank you all for joining us yet again for another episode of Jedi and Germs. This is episode 141 in the books. We've appreciated you being along for the ride with us. We love your support and your interactions. You can find us on Facebook, Jedi and Germs, Twitter, Jedi and Germs, anywhere you listen to podcasts, Jedi and Germs, TuneIn Radio. We're on everywhere. blogtalkradio.com/JediAndGerms and TornBySports.com. Thank you all. We'll talk to you real soon. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.